and by Terry pretty important.
I'm coming too.
We got Dana. Thanks, Dana.
Well, okay. Good deal. All right. I need the lower.
James has introduced himself several times this weekend. I'm Carrie, and we've been asked to speak with you guys about physical intimacy.
And when we first got asked to do this, we were asked actually by the Peppers. I got really excited. Of course, my simple, you know, brain went, hey, we should do some research on this. And Gary and I laughed about that a little bit, and we'll practice some research. And Gary said, well, maybe you can be head of R&D, which made me really proud. I got excited.
Yeah, then I was real quick to say, but I'll be in charge of quality control.
And I wasn't so proud of that. So, anyway. So
the truth is I was pretty shy and nervous about coming and speaking on this subject, very tempted to fake some sort of injury or something, but absolutely not going to do that. The reason James and I are where we are today is for so many people here that have shared their lives openly and transparently with us. And so every time we're asked, we obediently come rise to the challenge. And then a big reason that I was excited to do that is because what I've noticed in our relationship and then in speaking with other people, that sex within a marriage is a lot like the canary in the mine. And if you don't know that reference, miners would take a canary down into the mines with them. So if the air became too poisonous or the quality declined, the canary would die first. And then they could all get out. And I've seen that if anything at all is a little bit off in the marriage, you notice it in the bedroom first.
So today we're going to share with you some biblical truths that have impacted us over the years and through some of the barriers that we've had in our marriage and some of the perspectives that we've developed from those experiences and those truths. And then some of these come from a marriage study called Intimate Encounters that we took years ago. Highly recommended. I think someone showed us this and showed us a small, yeah, I should hold the books up here. But highly recommend it. We went through that some of our worst, darkest times in our marriage, which we very early on. And so,
yeah, and just so you know, they didn't ask us to speak because we have any sort of special authority or talent in this area. It's because God has just graciously and amazingly restored our relationship from just the brink of disaster and desolation.
Just share that with her.
Oh, yeah, okay. So a little bit about us. James and I met. We were both single parents attending college at U of H, or Coos. Both also fairly new to our faith, and we'd each already determined individually that we wanted to live a life in pursuit of God's will.
And so part of that, we had a year-long friendship and asked Terry to formally enter into a courtship with me in a godly courtship, and we wanted to honor that. And so we wanted to intimate marriage based on our faith, in which we were both individually pursuing Christ. We wanted a warm home where our family and friends felt comfortable and safe. And we wanted a marriage that would last, where divorce would not be an option.
James and I had already each had a trail of failed relationships. We both came from divorced homes. We had no role models for a successful marriage, much less a healthy Christian one. And because of this, we consistently sought biblical knowledge and wise counsel to try and build a marriage that would honor God. And at that point, I really thought, you know, that with enough research and dedication, we were going to get this right. We were going to follow God's plan and automatically be blessed with a close romantic relationship and a healthy and vibrant sex life.
If you could turn on slide one more.
So the first truth that we applied to our marriage and that we really sought out was in Genesis 2:24. It says, therefore, a man shall leave his father and his mother and shall cleave unto his wife, and the two shall become one flesh.
And so we believe this really starts in the beginning. I mean, we actually wrote up there, this is ancient. I think Sam happened to say it the other day. This literally happens on day 6 of creation, on the final day of creation, right after God creates Adam and Eve. And so it's very important. It's certainly reiterated by Jesus multiple times in the New Testament, as well as Paul. And we looked at this because a couple of key words here. Not only is it that God's creating marriage in the creation story, he's put it right in the beginning of time for us, for all of his people. And we've got two physical aspects associated with this. We do understand and believe this is greater than just physical nature, but we also don't want to look over it. And when we talk about the word cleave, part of the setting and the definition of cleave we've come across means to weld together inseparably. And that's a physical aspect. And so, and then we move on to becoming one flesh, and there is a physical message in that as well. And so we've been taught and warned, quite frankly, about the importance and significance of leaving your family of origin when you marry, and becoming one flesh and creating your own home. And so this is, early on, was a barrier for us in our marriage and our intimacy, because we had a lot of outside influences from family.
This was one of our first opportunities to apply this truth in our relationship, because we each had mothers that were trying to talk us out of marrying the other. We had to set up boundaries and how much time or how we dealt with those family members. And that was a good way for us to implement that. And I believe that our obedience to that command saved us from a lot of troubles. Talk to other families where that's been pretty devastating. But there are more truths we needed to learn, and some of those we definitely learned hard way.
So, next slide.
Yep, okay. Mark 10:9, therefore what God has joined together, let no man separate. Early in our relationship, did you
finish? No, sorry.
Early in our relationship, there was a time that James had deeply hurt my feelings. And when I shared it with him, he was defensive and dismissive, and that made me feel even more hurt. And then I was angry. And then we entered into this horrible cycle where he would keep asking me for sex, even though we never resolved the whole thing where he hurt my feelings in the first place. And then my rejection of him hurt his feelings, and then he became angry. It was more angry. There was no sex happening at all.
And this was like 6 months into our marriage. And just briefly, what happened is Carrie and I were committed to not have sex before marriage. And somewhere along the way, I lost sight of that and pressured Carrie into it. And anyway, we gave in and had sex, and then very shortly after we were married, Carrie was really crushed at what was a commitment between her and God, and what she felt like she had broken the promise that she made God. And when she told me about it, again, I was defensive and dismissive and said a lot of stupid things like, well, it's not like we're virgins, and we already have kids, so it's really not like we're virgins. And I downplayed it, and we're married now, so what's it matter? And it really led to a lot of pain on her part. And so I diminished the significance of it. And just one tip on that, that does not appear to be a great way to cope in marriage, especially if you're trying to be better sex. So I highly don't recommend that. And then we really moved to a place where we were more of angry roommates than anything, trying to raise kids. And one night, I was laying in bed praying and feeling very alone, and something hit me, and I would absolutely call it a revelation. As I was laying there, I saw my wedding day, and I saw Carrie in front of me, and holding her hands, and saying her, and hearing her vows right before I'm supposed to say I do. And it dawned on me, always in my mind for some reason, you know, you're facing your bride, and you look at her in the eye, and you're answering this question and saying, I do. And in the process of doing that, the process of laying in bed, I realized that it wasn't Carrie that was actually asking for this. It was a minister standing right next to me, talking in my ear. And he was asking me if I will take care of his daughter, to have and hold, and to take care of her, provide and protect her for the rest of our lives. And it hit me that I actually didn't say I do to my wife. I said I do to an answer that came from a representative of God. And I was telling God that I would take care of his daughter. So that was a really profound concept for me when I hit it. And so very, very quickly, almost immediately, there were only three things that came important to me. That this was my wife. She was hurting. And I promised God I would take care of her. So this helped me wake up and apologize to Carrie and give her room and, quite frankly, quit hounding her for sex. And I was resolved to wait as long as I took.
So when James finally did come and apologize and acknowledge my grief, you know, the loss of this hope that I had for us, it gave me space and time to heal. But it wasn't quick. It took me a long time to believe that he meant what he said and that he was going to keep meaning it, you know, tomorrow and the next day. But over time, I began to trust that James meant what he was saying, and a weight began to lift. I started to trust that I didn't have to constantly defend my position or my feelings, and that what I thought and felt was important to James. The improvement in our relationship and in the bedroom was a very slow process. It took a really long time for us to slowly reconnect as we built trust in the relationship. I really had to see that he meant what he said.
Yeah, and our perspective on that is that marriage is a covenant with Christ, and it's not just, or actually, I believe, it's not a promise to our spouse. It's actually a promise to God that we're going to take care of our spouse for men. And women are making their promise to Christ as well. Well, will you give us the next slide there? Oh, sorry. Oh, and so actually, it was seeking counsel that first got us to this place. My Paul introduced us to a couple that had more experience than us. They were wiser. They'd been through more in life, and it was our time with them that really was the first time I actually heard the pain that Carrie was in, and really saw it while we were meeting with them. And so seeking counsel became very important to us. And
so in Proverbs 12:15, the way of fools seems right to them, but the wise listen to advice.
And another piece of advice I received that was pretty impactful to us is I was talking to my Paul one day, right about the time Carrie and I were dating, and I was wondering if, you know, I was afraid of marriage, but I was thinking, well, maybe this is the type of woman I should marry, and trying to figure it out. And so I asked my Paul if he could go back in time. And he'd already been through one marriage and a divorce and has a great marriage that I've seen exactly out in front of me. But I asked him if he could go back in time, what would he look for in a wife? And he told me two things. He said, is she a born-again Christian? And I knew what that meant. And then he said, will she let you be the spiritual leader of your household? And I can honestly say yes to both of those things about Carrie, which was immediately when I knew that I was going to ask her to marry me.
So this truth is reiterated lots of times in the Bible. Another one of those verses, Proverbs 24:6, for by wise guidance you can wage your war, and an abundance of counselors there is victory. And so we have sought counsel and for our marriage in a lot of different ways, and some of them are teachings, just like we're having here. We've been to lots of wool ranches, lots of marriage and family. We've learned things like the five love languages, learned about the emotional bank account, lots of things that we've been able to directly apply to our marriage and help us relate to each other. Some bigger, deeper Bible-based studies, like the Intimate Encounters books that were showed earlier, and even doing the Crown Financial Ministry, going through that together, it's just helped us build a relationship and become closer. Counsel from other experienced Christian couples, like the couple that, you know, helped us with that one big turning point, and then tons of people that have just really helped share, like I said, vulnerably out of their own relationships and helped us it's really helped us when we faced similar challenges. And we've also been consistent at sticking with some formal couples therapy by licensed therapists.
And so our perspective on that is always seek advice and listen and be open to that. So that's another thing we've done.
So as we tried to learn what we could do along the way of having a healthy and successful marriage, we found the most important thing to start with was learning how to love each other according to God's design. This is a big one, so we're going to be on this one for a little while.
So Ephesians 5:33 tells us, however, each one of you also must love his wife as he loves himself.
And the wife must respect her husband.
So it's very important to know that actually these commands are mutually exclusive. I don't get to just love my wife when she respects me, and she doesn't just respect me when I love her. So, and these are commissions separately. This is a commission I've been given between me and God. He tells me to love her, and she also, has been a commission between her and God. So if she doesn't respect me, quite frankly, that's her issue with God. And if I don't love her, that's my issue with God.
So first, I'm going to talk about about my responsibility as well. Throughout multiple types of studies, Christian, non-Christian, doesn't matter, it's shown that men naturally have a high need to feel respected. In Proverbs 31:12, it says, the wife of noble character brings her husband good and not harm all of his days. I just think this is another example of that. In our home, I intentionally try to make sure that James feels respected, but learning how to do that required some conversations. You know, what I think is showing him respect may not be what makes him feel respected. So what are some things that I do that make you feel respected?
Yeah, so Carrie absolutely manages almost everything in the home. And I work and I try to support her in that, but when it comes to raising our children, when it comes to our family schedule, she's done all of that. And quite frankly, I feel respected because it's such a massive help for me. And in turn, when I feel respected that way, the two aren't mutually exclusive, but in turn, it makes me attracted to her, quite frankly, and want to love her more, and love her in the way that she wants to be loved.
Okay, so the Bible tells us this about respecting your husbands once or twice, and most of the time when we're charged with our way that we're supposed to, our responsibility in this marriage covenant is through submission. And Ephesians 5:22 says, wives, submit yourselves to your own husbands as you do the Lord. And there's several more like that. And I think it's really, really cool. Before James and I ever even got married, God clarified this for me in a way that I think was really gentle and really wonderful to kind of be able to wrap my mind around it before we ever even got married, because this is a really tough one, and especially in this culture, in this world, you know, you hear the word submit and your guard's up, you know, you're ready to fight. And so when James and I first got engaged, I had a good girlfriend that was, she was also a strong Christian, she was also a single mom, we were in ministry together. And she called me one day and she said, how are you going to do the submission thing? She said, how can you trust James? How can you submit to him? And I said, I hadn't thought about it all that much. It just kind of came to me. And really clearly, I knew that I didn't have to trust James. I was trusting God. This was a command that God gave me. And in being obedient to God, I trusted that God would cover me. I pretty much knew James was going to screw up. I mean, I did not know how much. I figured he might. I was right. But I didn't have to trust him. I trusted God to cover me. And even if James led us astray, I knew that I was in God's will. And under God's umbrella, and that's where I wanted to be. The other one, an important note about that one that I think is really cool, dig a little more while we were doing research for this. In that, Ephesians 5:22, the submission in the original Greek is a form that means it's not being imposed, it comes from within. And I think that's really cool because submission is a gift that a wife gives her husband. And it comes from within her. It's not something that can be imposed through obligation or intimidation or manipulation or even earned. It has to be a free gift that comes from within. And I think empowered by, you know, Christ in you. And I don't think it's something we can do without Christ's power. Ephesians 5:21, the other one I had up here, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. I just think that's a really neat way to look at it because my submission and my relationship is a result of my relationship with Christ, not with James. And Proverbs 19:13-4, a quarrelsome wife is like the constant dripping of a leaking roof. A prudent wife is from the Lord. Another way I look at submission is it's an attitude of willing adaptation and flexibility to go where God is leading your husband, not to fight against him and to try to drive the boat. And I think that's a neat verse about that.
So, as I watch Sherry with us, as I watch Sherry with us, it's very clear that this comes out of a place of strength from Sherry, that this is not submission as if you're weak. What I see her do in her relationship with God is incredibly valuable and extremely, she's a great role model, quite frankly, in how she walks with the Lord for me. So what I've seen, the way this has worked out, is we aren't bickering about who's in charge, quite frankly. We don't get into that. I don't have to deal with that, and it's been remarkable. It's another thing that actually is, it's extremely great. I mean, the world's hard enough. You're out there working all the time. God forbid you got to come home and be in a marriage where both of y'all are just fussing about who's going. And so that's really relieving for me. Creates an atmosphere of teamwork and it provides alignment, actually, for you to recognize Carrie's input. You know, we talked about wise counselors, and Carrie's by far my closest and wisest counselor. And when we're not fighting over who's in charge, then I'll share a little more about the idea of in charge as well. But when we're not fighting about it, it totally frees me up to actually hear what she's saying and listen to her. And quite frankly, 9 out of 10 times she's actually right. And I'm usually the one that has to catch up. But through that process, we end up usually coming together and making a decision that's in line with both of our needs and desires. And so when it comes to being in charge, my thoughts on that is that leadership's a responsibility, it's not a right. And so when we look at our command from God is to love our wives, is just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. And so this is a sacrificial love. Christ came for the church and sacrificed himself to die for the church and put himself under all kinds of scrutiny and pain and was reborn, came back just specifically for us. And this is a really strong message to me about what sacrificial love looks like. And I actually really enjoy it. That's the other thing. It's very nice to love Carrie in that way. You know, when we go back to the story about sex and asking for sex, I had to be able to give up my right. I had to give up whatever I thought was my right to ask for sex from Carrie, quite frankly. And that was a big one for me. This husbands loving their wives in a sacrificial way, wives respecting their husbands, this creates a positive feedback loop. And it's really wonderful in marriage. When I love her well, she respects me more. We don't fight about who's submitting, who's in charge, we don't have to deal with that. That makes actually me feel respected, and it makes me desire to love her better and more sacrificially. So Colossians 3:19 says, husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh with them. This is something that I continue to need to work on through the struggle, but because I'm getting patient. But that is a command that we have as well. And our perspective on that is to learn how to love each other as God commands.
Okay, so our next truth Be devoted to one another in love. Honor one another above yourselves. Another perspective that has been a huge help as we work on our marriage, and luckily we kind of have this bit of a vision early on, is to really treat our marriage relationship as a separate entity, a separate being that is more important than either one of us, and like an infant that needs nurturing.
And just a reminder on that, I don't, for those of you that haven't had children or haven't been around kids in a while,
or successfully blocked it out,
forgotten it, they really don't care what your needs are. And an infant does not care whether you're tired, whether you're worn out, whether you're busy, whether you're hungry. They only care about what their needs are. And we have learned to respect our marriage in that fashion, that it doesn't care about whether I'm tired, whether I'm right, or whatever nonsense I think is accurate. It's the marriage itself has a need and desire for us to invest in it and keep it growing and alive and nurturing. And so that's really how we view that as well.
Yeah, and so I've been able to apply this kind of regardless of how I feel towards James in any given moment, when I'm choosing my words and my actions, especially my words, I think, how will this affect my marriage? And then it doesn't matter what James has done, because I'm prioritizing the marriage above either one of us. So above whatever consequence or whatever I think he deserves or whatever justification that I think I have. The marriage is the priority.
Yeah, I hope for me, many times I get caught up in my righteousness, and many times I think, well, I'm right, Carrie's wrong, she just needs to get over it and listen to me. It doesn't happen too much anymore, to tell you the truth. Learned a lot from feedback from her. But that's always the best saying, and I give you a tip on that. That doesn't lead to better sex, nor does it lead to sex at all. So don't learn from that as a man. But when I follow my marriage as something separate and above and more important than either one of us, especially me, it's helping to step out of my own stubbornness and stupidity and prioritize our unity. And this creates common ground for us to come together and address the issue. So when I truly respect that I need to nurture this infant, my righteousness falls away, and I'm truly available for character, transparency, and vulnerability. Here's the tip. This does lead to sex and better sex.
So the perspective we try to maintain is prioritizing the marriage above the individuals, treating the marriage as a separate entity that must be nurtured, like an infant. This perspective certainly applies when we choose how we're going to speak to each other. Right? Proverbs 18:21. Words kill, words give life. They're either poison or fruit. You choose. And most of our Bible verses are out of NIV. It's what I always use. But this one, I got out of the message because I thought it was just such a really accurate description of the message here. And this is how powerful our words are and the responsibility we wield when we're using them. The control we have over them is our choice. So a couple Bible verses that we have listed there, I'm not going to read them out, about controlling your words. 1 Thessalonians 5:11 and Ephesians 4:29. And then also this applies to your words inside your head, your brain voice, as we like to say, about controlling your thoughts. And so we have, those are the two verses for that, 2 Corinthians 10:5 and Philippians 4:8. An aspect of this is also remembering to use your words. Our words cannot be used to encourage or build up or benefit anyone if we don't speak them. And also, your spouse, your partner, can't know what you want or you don't want if you don't tell them. So use your words. Use them wisely.
A couple of notes on that from advice from your encounters, from the study itself, and our experience. To identify and meditate on 3 things you love about your spouse and tell them throughout the day. And this has been impactful for us, especially when times were hard. When Carrie uses her words and thanks me for something that I work hard at, like providing for the family or small things, like picking up dead bugs even. It's that simple. It makes me feel valued. It makes me feel respected.
Yeah. Something that James says to me a lot, it seems like little and silly, but multiple times a week, a lot, he'll see something, you know, something will happen that he's happy with, he likes, he's like, I'm going to marry you someday. And it's hilarious. We've been married 18 years, but every time, like, it makes me know that, oh, he still wants me, I'm valuable, he's interested.
So, the sex truth took me a minute to get, actually, and you can pick that up there, thank you. So, it's Proverbs 19:22 says, what a person desires is unfailing love. So, something that's dramatically improved our physical intimacy is actively and intentionally investing in our marriage relationship.
Yeah, we had done a lot of damage really quickly in it. That's why there's like 15 slides on the fixing part. It took a lot. So over time and through all this counseling and all the things that we learned, we've really worked on improving our personal relationship. We've done this through date nights, weekends away. And something that happens there is getting away from your responsibilities. And sometimes that's even getting away from the husband that has annoyed me all week or really irritated me, because when I go away for the weekend, I'm taking my boyfriend James. Husband James, I'm not thinking about him. But me and boyfriend James, we're going to go take a trip.
And then they're going to go for me. Look out.
Did you have anything else on that? I know we are. Okay, we're hurrying y'all. Sorry.
So the perspective on this one is that sex doesn't create intimacy, but intimacy creates great sex. And so the next one's actually very dear to me. We're going to have to pick this up a little bit. We're running behind. But the next one's very dear to me and dear to me. And if I had made an office, any political office that I had any interest in running, this would be our first objective of government assistance, actually. And that is Deuteronomy 24:25 says, when a man has taken on a wife, he shall not go off to war, neither shall he be charged with any business. But he shall be free at home 1 year and shall cheer up his wife, which he has taken.
And so in my research into these words from the Bible, in this verse, the Hebrew word for cheer up means to know sexually and to understand what is exclusively pleasing. So he needs to learn how to know sexually his wife and learn how to exclusively please her and spend a year on it. This just shows that God's charged to invest time and energy in developing a mutually satisfying sex life. It's so important that there's to spend all this time undistracted.
And our perspective on that is that your spouse is a gift that you get to unwrap for the rest of your life. And if you spend that time, it's just remarkable. Really is a wonderful experience.
So we talked about all the things couples can do to support healthy intimacy. However, it's important to know that even when you're doing all the things, we can always expect challenges and difficulties.
So our next truth is John 16:33, and it's, in this world you will have trouble.
Yep. Our relationship will face trouble. Usually that trouble will come from within, from one or both of us giving in to the temptations that interfere with loving each other in the way that we are commanded.
Yeah, and so typically men or myself are tempted physically and mentally through either sex or pornography. And that's been an issue for me. Giving in to these temptations and not addressing them interferes with our ability to love and intimately connect with my ability to love and intimately connect with Carrie. And so, however, although I'm not judged for being tempted, it's still my responsibility to deal with it. And 1 Corinthians 10:13 tells us that no temptation is overtaking you except what is common to mankind. God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, he will also provide a way out so that you can endure it.
All right, and so I think it's always been really easy for me to think that I don't struggle with temptation because, I'm not thinking about sex constantly or sex with other people. Pornography is not a huge problem. And so I think it's easy for me to think I don't have to worry about temptation. But the way we're commanded to love each other is different. And I think that when, because our commitments are different than each other, it makes sense that our temptations are different. And so when a man gives into those physical temptations, it interferes with our ability to feel loved. And so I think that when the temptations we face interfere with their feeling respected. And so I think a lot of things that would do that and that do happen, and things we have to be worried about being tempted, is the habit of criticism, being critical in our daily words and actions, being cold or unavailable sexually, using sex as a weapon or a punishment, demonstrating a lack of faith in their abilities, and failing to recognize contributions, competing for leadership in marriage, comparing them to neighbor or dad or anybody else that did a better job at anything. So instead, I try to make a habit of thankfulness and use words of affirmation and pray for God's help and direction.
So our perspective on that is, one partner should anticipate temptation and be prepared.
All right. Romans 3:23 says, "For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God." We can prepare to face temptation through prayer and accountability. We also recognize that sin is inevitable, and we need to seek God's help with forgiveness. Ephesians 4:31-32, "Get rid of all bitterness, rage, and anger, brawling, and slander, along with every form of malice. Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as in Christ God forgave you."
So we're going to have to move through this pretty quickly, although this is important. At some point, a few years after we began to heal on our early damaged marriage, I found myself needing to apologize to Carrie again. And my usage of pornography had become so prevalent that it was interfering with my ability to be intimate with my wife. And interesting enough, it didn't interfere with my ability to have sex with my wife. It interfered with my ability to be intimate with my wife. And it's very important that there's a distinction there. Those are two very different things.
Okay. So when James told me that time that he'd been hiding his viewing of pornography, I was angry. I was immediately angry because his deception had created an additional barrier. I was so hurt and I was so angry. But it became abundantly clear to me, just all of a sudden, that I needed to forgive him. And so last time, I mean, we went through this long, slow process. I kept waiting for feeling like I was forgiving him. I kept asking myself, like, have I forgiven him? I don't feel it. And this time, forgiving James was so different. I wasn't waiting for a feeling, but instead willfully and obediently submitting to the command given in Colossians 3:13. Bear with each other and forgive one another. If any of you have a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you. By any worldly standards, I was justified in my pain and anger. But by releasing my right to be hurt and angry, it freed me of the burden and weight of that pain and hurt. I immediately felt the barriers between me and James disappear.
This happened actually within like 7 minutes. I told her this, she broke down in tears, and then I watched her just say, "I forgive you." And I watched her completely change and go from great pain to great peace. And it was remarkable to witness. So we had certainly had a deep closeness and connection without any lingering blame or guilt. And I felt completely forgiven and unjudged. And this created a safe and deep bond between us.
Another relevant verse Ephesians 4:26, "In your anger, do not go sin. Do not let the sun go down while you're still angry." I think that's super common, the don't go to bed angry thing. I don't think that means stay up all night and figure it out. I mean, just make a plan. Don't carry that. It creates all sorts. Holding on to that bitterness is poison.
And I think the most important thing about this is to recognize that forgiveness is a command. It's not a choice. It's not what we're waiting for a feeling. It's a command. Carrie taught me that. So
the most freeing aspect of the journey that that we've been on these last 18 years is finding our true security in Christ. James and I came together as two broken people willing to seek God's will in our lives. Jeremiah 33:6 says, I will heal my people and let them enjoy abundant peace and security. When we place our security in God and not in each other, it puts the responsibility in the right place.
Yeah. Well, we go to the last slide for us. We're going to skip over one. And we're going to leave you with this. This is our prayer for each one of you. And it's that husbands leave your mothers and fathers and cleave to your wife. And the two of y'all become one flesh. We go through this process. We've been through this process and shared with you kind of where we are. We're still going through this process, but it's amazing and it's beautiful and wonderful. And it leads to the most fulfilling, physical intimacy and closeness that I've ever experienced in my life. And it's a gift. So that's what we got for you.
No, we have homework.
Actually, we got a handout for you that we can just pass out.
I'll tell you about it while it's getting passed out. So straight from Intimate Encounters, there's a little worksheet about growing your physical relationship. It's actually homework, so you don't have to do it tonight. I know you have kids in the room. But start thinking about these things, and it talks about just some things to think about and to plan for. And then on the other side, it's about restoration. I mean, we came from a place of brokenness and hurt and anger, and now we have this amazing close relationship. And I've also learned not to limit God, because the level that we're able to enjoy each other at, I did not know existed. And so I figure if I didn't even know that existed, then I don't even know what God has in store for us next.
Thank you all very much. To get handed out, and we're going to move into our next marriage and family hour. Gary, you think we take literally 5 minutes? Let's go ahead and take a quick bathroom break, and we'll please try to be back in about 5 minutes.
Well done, man.
He's going to turn blue.